You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Coming up on episode 14 of Off Air with Joe
and Oral.
Our guest is the Dodgers Director of Player Performance, Brandon McDaniels, in his eighth year in the big leagues with the Dodgers, and brings a perspective, Oral, that only he can bring. He's going to share some great stories, some great details. He's got particularly close relationships with some of the guys that have been there a longer time, Clayton Kershaw, Justin Turner, and stories and details that only Brandon is going to be able to give you.
If you work out at home and you trust your different coaches, you get the inside information. Pull back the curtain on the guy that trains the guys on your favorite team.
Sold. I'm listening. What else?
Well, Dave Roberts. Dave Roberts is actually, again, fantastic. This might be the most relaxed interview I've heard Dave Roberts do of the 14 we've done with him. And it's exciting. He even tells a really cute story about Jock Peterson and Cody Bellinger. In the midst of the pandemic, they are able to talk to each other a lot louder, and they had a good back and forth.
All right. All that and more coming up here on episode 14.
Today's podcast is brought to you by San Manuel Casino, AMPM, Qcells, and Security Benefit.
You're really good at that part. I think we should let you do it every week.
Thank you.
San Manuel Casino, now open, wants to thank you for waiting and doing your part to stay safe. Now they're ready to do theirs. You'll notice increased health and safety measures in place for all the casino's valued guests and team members, including extra care with cleanliness, training team members on current safety measures, and rearranging the fun and thrills on site that'll give you more space to play safely. Through the new San Manuel Mobile Meals program, guests can take their favorite food for takeout using their mobile device. And our new guest safety concierge team is working around the clock to take care of you. Although things might look a little different, San Manuel Casino's dedication to warm greetings and friendly service remains. For more information on what to expect during your visit, go to sanmanuel.com/guest safety.
As a proud partner of the Dodgers, AMPM wants to remind you that they're your one-stop shop for all your baseball snack cravings. Whether you're wanting a delicious Dodger dog or a rib sandwich, or maybe just want to sneak in a fountain drink and a warm cookie, AMPM's got all your snacking bases covered. So you can pick up some nachos, listen to me and Joe talk to your favorite players, and then it's almost like baseball is back. AMPM, too much good stuff.
Harness unlimited energy from the sun through solar, a sustainable investment for energy independence. Curious to see if solar is worth it for you? Calculate your savings with Qcells, the number one solar panel market share leader and official solar partner of the Dodgers. Visit Qcells at www.q-cells.us to learn more today.
Every winning season is built on a strong team, a team committed to executing a solid game plan. At Security Benefit, we want to help you and your advisor build your retirement game plan to help you stay committed during these uncertain times so that when it's time to execute, you know what you've got, a solid team behind you. When it comes to retirement, losing is not an option. Talk to your financial advisor to see how you can plan for retirement. Security Benefit is a proud sponsor of the Los Angeles Dodgers.
This is episode 14 of Off Air, so hit it, Frankie. All right, so you're back at the park after this long layoff. What's it been like? Has it been weird? Has it been fun? What are kind of your emotions so far, Brandon?
I've been very fortunate to have been able to
kind of ease into this. Like, we were able to get back in here, you know, a few weeks back, start working out on a one-to-one basis outside, kind of introduce guys to the weight room, all like being extremely diligent with cleaning, with masks, with social distancing and all that. So like, really all this is just a very, you know, upscaled version of what we were doing. We just have a lot more people around. It's fascinating to watch, number one, like just like the operations. It's really humbling to watch like lives change, our jobs change, I guess, which ultimately like affects livelihood. Like our medical staff, I don't know if they've slept in a month. I do not envy what they have to do. Like it is really tough and challenging. And there's a lot, like, I'm sure they feel like there's a lot of pressure on them. I don't know if there is, but I'm sure they feel like they've got to do some things. I'm watching our chefs and our dietitians like change the absolute way we do food. Like, we're eating outside now. You can't have food inside. Everything has to be individually portioned out. There's no more buffets. And so like, I'm under the mindset of the building's flooding. I'm going to grab a bucket and help. And then whatever, you know, whatever time I have left over for the players is to make sure that we get ready by the season. And so I can't be happier to be back. I think a lot of people would agree with that. I think I used a line with Oral the other day, like it's extremely complicated, but therapeutic at the same time.
Yeah. Is it a big shift from phone calls and paperwork to now so hands-on, like just a big, huge shift?
Yeah. We went from a longer off season than we normally had in, you know, after losing in the DS last year to coming in to spring training, arguably the best spring training that I've had in 9 years here, that I've been a part of in 9 years. And I think we say that every year, but like, we're obviously extremely talented and we have a great, like, great mix. So it's probably the best of those two combinations to like, what the heck is going on in the world. And we went back into this like, tweener off season mode of let's hover. Like, we could be 4 weeks, we could be 6 weeks, we could be 12 weeks. We had no idea. And I remember being on a call with Gomes and Pryor very early during the shutdown and kind of throwing darts at July 1, like thinking July 1 was going to be the day that we would know whether this was going to happen or not, or we'd be talking about showing up. And so luckily, because of that, like, we were able to hover and get guys built up as much as we possibly could under the you know, constraints. To now it's like, oh, we're here. we gotta do this. Like, we have 21 days to get position players ready to play 4 games in a row. We have 21 days to get 5 starting pitchers, 6 starting pitchers, whatever it is, build up to, you know, I'm not saying what we'd normally be in spring training, but enough to go out and compete and not have to waste a bullpen or run through a bullpen in the first 2 games of a series. And then lastly, like, we got to figure out new routines, because it isn't just show up to the ballpark when you want to anymore. Like, you're checking in and getting your temperatures taken, and you can only have 6 people in the weight room and 6 people in the training room and whatever it might be. So there's a lot going on in the next 21 days.
Anybody in particular, Brandon, that showed up after not seeing them, maybe other than just FaceTime for a few months, that showed up, walked through the door, and you said, dang, you
look Gratterall. Gratterall. Yeah. Yeah, Gratterall looks great. Like, I can't tell if Gratterall is going to play like middle linebacker for the Rams or you know, shut down like big innings for us.
Yeah.
He is something else, man. When he is put together, you run into that in the hallway and it's not fun.
What did he do to look the way he looks?
He just continued to work out. Like, we gave him some equipment. I think this really affected everybody's diet, because it wasn't just easy to go to restaurants and eat the way that you normally ate. But I think that, like, the blessing in disguise has really kind of changed the way that people have gone about their food. But yeah, he continued to work out. He continued to throw. He was in Arizona, so we had eyes and hands on him as much as we can't say hands on anymore, but we had eyes on him as much as we possibly could. You know, there's a lot of guys, though. Like, Corey Seager Corey Seager looks like Corey Seager.
Wow.
I'm so excited to what I've seen in the last 8 weeks, and how I wrote 15 weeks of workouts for Corey, which is as long as our off season was, by the way, just for those counting at home. Corey looks like Corey. It has been like a pleasure and so much fun to like work with him and talk with him over the last 15 weeks. Because when he gets in the box now, like there's that Corey Seager presence.
That's 3 years in the making to get back there.
Yeah.
What's the biggest thing that you have to watch for moving from a guy who's just doing his off-season workouts, maybe getting his swings in the cages or throwing his side works, but he's also doing his cardio and his lifting? What's the biggest change then when they get onto the field and all of a sudden it's more full-time baseball?
Yeah, I think the first and foremost thing is, like, we have great workers, and we have guys that throw, that run, that lift, and hit, whatever their modality is. But no matter what, when you get around your buddies and you get around your team and the cameras around you, like, you take it to another level. And so bullpens become a little bit firmer, batting practice, the swings get a little bit more intentful. And in the weight room, you get in a little bit of a competition, whether you admit it or not. And so being extremely mindful, and I don't want to tell guys to back off to go. Like, we've got to get ready to play. But if you introduced a new stress today, maybe we should wait till tomorrow to introduce the next stress and the next stress and the next stress. And we'll get back to all being able to do all those things in one day, but we don't have to conquer this, you know, in 1 year in 1 day or 1 week or whatever.
We'll talk a little more, Brandon, about the current Dodgers and the current season, but I want to get into your background a little bit. Really interesting background. You play college baseball. You start your professional career in baseball, but then you go work in the military. You train soldiers at Fort Meade before getting back into baseball. What was that crossover like, and are there crossovers between training people for the military and training people to play Major League Baseball?
Yeah, obviously, like, huge perspective switch when I went from working in baseball to working in the military with the Department of Defense. The first and foremost thing that I noticed right away, it's a select group of men and women that have their own little clubhouse. And so, oddly enough, it gave that same sense of being a part of something. It gave that same sense of, like, locker room type stuff. Mm-hmm. And so very similar mindsets. Secondly, I got into working in the military thinking, like, whatever I say they're going to do, like, that's the military, right? Like, jumping how high. Yeah, it's the complete opposite.
Really?
Yeah. But they do it from a good place. There's a lot of questions asked. We hear it all the time. Like, this is my career, and this is what got me here to this point. Like, as a special ops, as a Department of Defense, whatever, you're saying, this is what's got me to this point. Why would I change that? You really need to convince me. The mindsets are very similar. Like, the how they're wired and their routines and how they go about their things, very similar. The two biggest differences, the obvious one, like, they're fighting for our country and fighting for their lives. We're not doing that in a baseball locker room. And then just you don't get to see him at 7 o'clock. Like, I get to see Clayton Kershaw take the mound at 7:10. I never got to see an athlete in the military do their job. And that's tough as a strength coach, to be able to watch Kersh McMahon. He's not getting over his front side like he was before, or torso angle's not the same thing. Like, when you don't get to see somebody do what they do for a living in real time, it's tough to work backwards from that.
Like, for me, when I meet the younger guys in this generation, they don't have any idea a lot of times what I did or where I was, so you have to earn the respect. People don't know your background when all of a sudden they walk into a locker room, so you have to earn their respect too.
Yeah, absolutely. And everything is kind of derived from love, in my opinion. When I was younger, my first go around in baseball, like, everything was derived from, like, I want to be the best coach. I want to get the best information to you to make you successful. And I think it came from a really good place, but I think I came off very brash at times because it was just black and white. Here it is. Why don't you do it? And now, like, I just have, and it's one of the models that I tell our whole performance staff is, like, your love has to be unconditional for these guys. They're not going to agree with us all the time. They're not going to agree with us a lot. And they're going to do some things that really, it's like your children. They're going to do some things that really upset you and make you want to pull your hair out. And for me, like, that stuff doesn't bother me. Like, I look forward to those challenges every day of having those tough conversations. And players always see that I'm going to be the same guy every day because of that. Like, we can disagree, we can argue, and then the next day, like, what do you need? How can I help you? What do we need to do to get you ready to help us tonight? And from that, I think I've had some really good luck of having good relationships with players.
Any of the current Dodgers cut out for military training?
Well, I mean, Kersh, obviously. Like, Kersh would, yeah. Kersh would fit right in with that mindset. And just his ability to separate really quickly what he needs to do on the baseball field and then how he treats people, you know, outside of that. Like, he can hone in and seem like the most intense person in the world. And then as soon as it's over, he obviously is the most humble human being most of us have ever been around. You know, after that, Seager's got some qualities that, that would make me believe that he would fit right into that community. Barnsey would fit in.
Barnsey would be on point, wouldn't he? He'd be the point guy.
Yeah. He definitely, you know, there's also some, like, there's some unassuming guys that could be the Jason Bourne type, like Adam Kolarik.
Oh yeah. Look out, huh?
Yo, I mean, is, you know, you see Adam Kolarik, you see Gratterall walk down the street and you know, that's a professional athlete. Yeah. You see Kolarik walk down the street and he could be the most, you know, he could be professional athlete or the accountant.
Yeah. Or special agent.
And so I'll just tell him that one, like, hey, you live in Maryland. When this baseball thing's over, like, you might have a calling. It's just a normal dude.
And I want to say that his father has a background in, what is it, FBI or something government related. So maybe he actually is a special agent.
Yeah. I knew Spores has that.
Okay. Right.
So I'm pretty sure Spores' parents know more about me than I know about me.
A little troubling, but hey, you mentioned Kershaw. You guys have a very tight relationship. He relies on you a lot for, you know, we talk about the maniacal schedule that he's got. You are right there every step of the way through that schedule. Have you ever screwed it up and been off time?
First start of the 2014 spring training, and I'm running around with my head cut off. I just had a baby. Caleb was just born. And no excuse, but, like, there's a lot going on in my brain. And I'm supposed to be out 34 minutes before the game starts, before first pitch, to stretch him out. I figure it out at, like, 28 minutes. Like, I'm 6 minutes late. I don't go. I'm like, nope, I'm not going. Because he's already moved on. He's in the pen by now. So I wait, and you know at CBR where the tunnel's at, where you walk up the stairs to get to the backside of the clubhouse. Yeah. And I wait there until he comes out, and I just see the shadow, and I just hear him like, you weren't there. And I was like, I'm no excuse. It'll never happen again. And so I have not, like, and Alana gives me crap because Alana's sitting in the dugout before every game, right? She's sitting in the booth or sitting in the well.
Yeah.
I mean, she just, like, points to her watch. Because I told her the story, obviously. It's like, I have a feeling that if I was going to be late, Alana would call me or set off an alarm. So I feel really good that Kersh has two people making sure that he's going to get stretched. But there's a lot, like, it would be easier if everybody was like that. Mm. But not everybody operates that way, and I wouldn't expect them to. But I just appreciate it so much. And I've always said this about Kersh. Kersh knows his body so well because he has a routine. So when something little is off in the normal guy who's not paying attention, they don't realize it until it's too late. When something's off with Kersh, he knows instantly, and he now has time to actually, like, fix the situation before we get going. And so that is, like, hands down the most important part of it. People can say whatever they want of the routine or give him crap for being so strict, but I appreciate it because he's going to play the game as long as he wants to because of that.
And it sure has been cool to watch him evolve the last few years, hasn't it?
Right. Like, obviously, like, there's the obvious, like, he became a dad, and I think that changes all of us. Now he's got, him and I both have three kids. So we have a lot of conversations about that. We both have kids that are very young now in the months. And so we talk about the lack of sleep that comes with that. But obviously on the pitching side, we've all seen what he's done, and to be still like at the top of the game and to still go out and give your team a chance to win every 5 days. For me personally, it's been really cool to watch him work in the weight room. Because when I got here, it was 23-year-old, just coming off of Cy Young, Clayton Kershaw, that lifted like a 23-year-old. And now, like, I still think that he lifts like a 23-year-old because he's that athletic, but he's changed the way he goes about his business and is just always so open. Like, no one can sit in a room with the people that he gets to sit in a room with. Like, I think about the people I've been exposed to just because of, like, Sandy comes down and talks about pitching with Kersh, and I'm like trying to get as close as I possibly can just to hear. He has an unbelievable ability to take one good thing or one great thing from every conversation and figure out how he can apply it to his game. And he also is the best at being like, that's really good. I don't think now's a good time to add it. So I'm going to add it when the time is right or next year or whatever it might be. Like I've always said, like with his programs, like there's a cutoff date. And when he gets the cutoff date, like this is what we're doing that year. And we're going to mess around with the semantics of it, but we're not introducing anything new until next year. And that, like, back to your point earlier, Oral, of when guys show up to spring training, like we can't change too much. We can't just all of a sudden like develop a new routine. And Kersh is on point with that.
That old cliche, when guys come into spring training, they always say, you know, this is the best shape I've ever been in. And it's a cliche because it's a fact, right? Because we gain knowledge every year. We get new ways to go about it and learn our body and get more knowledge. What did we learn this year, coming into this year, that you're trying to adapt with guys?
Well, we did that. So into this 2.0 summer camp thing, I have an unbelievable staff. So as much as I talk about the players, like Travis Smith, Brian Stoneberg, and myself have been together for 9 years. That's really cool. Like that is like the part that I will always take to the grave with me, is like we've had great continuity and we've grown together as people and as professionals. And so Sony is kind of like, he's the mad scientist of the group, and he always has great ideas. And so we always implement a lot of his programming, especially he runs all of our minor league programming. Trav has just grown tremendously over the years and is now our, you know, our head strength coach. And we did this Franz Bosch course. I think you saw some of it, Oral, in spring training. Franz came over from the Netherlands. And we started talking about like how the pelvis moves and how basically your limbs play together and your torso plays together when you do movements, when you do running or when you do throwing or when you do hitting. And usually we take those courses and we kind of storm away until the next year and we figure out how we're going to implement it. Trav saw like an opening in our programming right away that there was low risk, and he got all this hip locking stuff in with our runners and with our position players. And now Stoney's doing it with our pitchers. And so like teaching their guys how to use their pelvis and how to co-contract like their whole hip when they're doing a movement. The early returns, I say early, like we haven't even played a game yet, but the early returns have been great. They've been really good. And so it's given us a new way of going about our business that's qualitative and not quantitative. And I know we live in an age like everybody wants to quantify everything. Like we really, really focus on the quality of how the pelvis moves because it plays with the low back, it plays with hamstrings, it plays with a lot of things that get injured in baseball. And we feel like if we can get that thing moving more precisely, that we're going to be performing at a higher level, but also have the ability to be durable.
You know, listening to you talk about that, that doesn't sound like a, quote, strength and conditioning coach talking, and that's what your title was to begin. But the position has evolved to where it's a whole lot more than that. You're now the director of player performance. I mean, first of all, no pressure, right? That title is like when they don't perform, we'll just get mad at Brandon. What falls
which
under
very
that?
Well could be the it could be the thing. Could be Andrew's thing. He's like, well, let's just give him this title and all good after that.
It'd be easy to ax him then when the team doesn't play well. See ya, Brandon. They didn't perform well. What does that involve?
I think there's the high performance model out there, which everybody talks about in a lot of foreign sports, a lot of soccer, rugby, things like that. And the high performance model is usually somebody that runs strength and conditioning, nutrition, medical, sports science, and sports psychology. Andrew obviously like goes about his business in a much different way than most leaders do. And he's very creative and very open. And I think that he does an unbelievable job of putting people in positions of strength. And so, lack of a better term, my strength is in the weight room. My strength is with nutrition. My strength is with sports science. And so I'm kind of overseeing all of those areas and trying to put ourselves in the best position possible to transition to the field. And the reason why it's called player performance is I think that too many times these performance roles take on, it's like it's its own sport. We play baseball and I want our guys to be the best baseball players ever. And so there's some really cool stuff that goes on in the weight room. There's some really cool stuff that goes on in all these arenas. But in our motto is if you ask yourself, I tell our minor league strength coaches this, if you're in a dilemma and you say, should I do this or not? You have to ask yourself, is it going to help him be a better baseball player? And if the answer is yes, you will never be wrong. If the answer is no, then you probably need to either find out a better way to explain it or not do it at all. And so I work closely with Mark. I work closely with Rob and Brant, obviously Connor McGinnis, Rob Hill, we're all kind of like a tight knit group. If someone's not spinning a breaking ball the right way, there's a biomechanical reason for that. We might be able to affect that in the weight room. If somebody's not finishing the sixth and seventh inning the same way that they were the first and second, that could be a micronutrient issue. That could be a macronutrient issue. Could be a conditioning issue. And so we're working backwards on all that stuff just to make sure that no stone's left unturned.
You look towards if an exercise makes them a better baseball player, but there also has to be a risk reward also on some of the exercises, right?
Totally. And that goes into it, because if there's risk, 51% risk, 52% risk even, that this could potentially hurt somebody, it's not going to make them a better player. And that risk usually has to do with time in my mind. And so we send players to do weighted ball programs, or we send players to get on like more intense strength and conditioning programs. That usually is coming at a downtime. We would never introduce that February 15th when guys get their physical done.
I'm fortunate enough to get in uniform in spring training, and I've watched over probably the last 5 years something develop that I thought was very interesting, which was you guys plotting how hard a guy runs during a game, how the rest quotient has really kind of been upgraded or at least more specifically evaluated.
Yeah. It started when I was in Pittsburgh. Kyle Stark, who's a former farm director, had a 5-second rule. And we did times on every guy. The strength coaches were the cops. We were the traffic officers. If somebody ran over 5 seconds, we had to walk down to the manager and say, such and such ran 5.1. He had to yank him out of the game. Well, so we took, imagine having 7 affiliates plus the Dominican Republic, 140 games. We got every base running time over the span of that for 3 years. So we had a pretty good little data set. So it went from being like traffic police to we found out that because of that 5-second rule that our guys were running faster in August than they were in April. And then when I got here, Stan Conte was really big on plotting like hamstring injuries, like why things were happening. So then we started counting distances and reps and things like that to see if there's a workload issue. Now, like my big thing is comparing all that stuff to understand like Corey Seager goes to his left better than his right. So do we need to shade him a certain, does Dino need to shade him a certain way? A guy runs 12 sprints, but he usually runs 6 sprints. Okay, we're looking at StatCast. Did his speed go down the next day? If not, like he probably wasn't overtrained. If it did, that's a good way to look now at what we can do in the weight room, what Neil and Ron can do in the training room with what they do from a recovery standpoint to put somebody in the best position to succeed.
Oral talks about how he wouldn't have slept had he played in this generation, just because there's so much information to soak in if you want it.
Oh, I mean, it is. I don't envy the player now that like has. I tell the story. You walk into our clubhouse. You have the video room. This is probably the first. Like you have Alex's office, and you have the video room, which is the first thing. I've counted days where 20 people have talked to players before they've gotten to the food room, which is just through the locker room. And that's no one's fault. But think about the athlete has all those different people that are coming to them with all that different information and all that's really good. And if you don't have a good filter, that's tough. And so being able, and that's what Andrew's so practical and Dave is so practical. Like Dave has helped a ton with that, like get the information to the guys when they need it and only give them what they need. Like don't leave too much out there for like room for interpretation, because you got to think about, you can't think about stuff when you're playing. Mark is also amazing at that. You know, Mark's been so much fun to watch. I'm excited for him to finally coach a game, hopefully, as the pitching coach. But Mark has been so much fun to watch. He's taught me so much. Like obviously what he went through with it in his career. Like I was a huge Cubs fan, by the way, growing up. I grew up in the Midwest. And so I was obviously like a Cubs fan during the 2003 season. So I ride Mark.
Me too, man. This is me. He's like, Nomar was my guy, like as a shortstop. I wore number 5 because of Nomar. Brady Quinn was my guy because, you know, Notre Dame
Look
football.
At you.
Mark Pryor was my guy as a Cubs. They're all friends now. It's wacky. One of these days I'm going to wake up. But yeah. Hey, I mean, Mark has seen it all, and that's cliche, but he's seen it all and he's been it all. So he can relate with everybody.
He can relate with the elite player. He can relate with Kirsch because he's been at the pinnacle of the game. Maybe not to the level that, you know, no one's at the level of Kirsch is, but he at least has been one of the best pitchers in the game to know what that feels like. He's also not been able to throw a baseball without pain, which a lot of guys go through. And so it just starts because deeply rooted, he's an unbelievable human being, as you guys know, because you've been around him. But he's just very practical. He's very honest. And he just gives it to you the way it is, because that's all he wanted as a player.
Has he helped you with your coffee?
I was a pretty poor coffee drinker before. Like I drank a lot of coffee, mm-hmm. but not good coffee. And now like we have a coffee thread. I have a Chemex at home. I'm buying one of the, I've become quite the coffee snob.
Yeah.
And I'm faking it with Mark when Mark's in the room. Like he's talking like Doc talks about wine.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh yeah, it was a light blend and it really, the fruit really popped. And I'm like, what am I talking about? But I just want to fit in with him so I can get in on the coffee when it comes around.
It's funny. Your job is to transform bodies and players. Sometimes he's transformed your life as a coffee drinker. So.
Totally. But all joking aside, like he's made me such a better, like performance mind of understanding the tech better, understanding when to use it, when not to use it, understanding the weight room. Like Oral's been like, not to beef you up while we're on the podcast, but like Oral and I've had these conversations for 8 or 9 years now. And it's been extremely helpful of bringing it back to reality, to have conversations with guys like Oral and Mark.
You know, what's fun is to just expose what we go through on the field, mentally, physically, training wise, and how we, like you, excuse me, you touched on it with, you've got to have filters when you come in the locker room. And that was one of the biggest keys of having a long career, was understanding myself and then understanding the information that guys like you would bring to me and how to apply it and when to apply it. And that's a huge tool that Clayton Kershaw has. I'm hoping that Walker Buehler continues to develop and others, Kenley Jansen has now. And so you can see guys that can have 3 or 4 good years because they just out-talent the competition. They out-strength them. But when you have a guy who can pitch for 15 to 20 years or play for 15 to 20 years, you know that guy's got a good filter. And you've had a special relationship with Justin Turner and turned his life around. And he's got to have had a great filter with you guys and your communication.
I still – obviously, like, my life has changed dramatically because of JT's career. And I'm always grateful to him for that. The thing with JT is he's a coach. Like he literally is a coach already who gets to play. Like he teaches me something about hitting every day. We go at it about what the body's doing. We go at it about real versus feel and, you know, just things like that. And so it was really cool as he was going through his swing change in 14. I was like, hey, I'm going to move to LA and we're going to train every day. Cause in 14, He hit, what, 334. Didn't have enough at-bats to qualify for a batting title. But, and this guy, like, was on. I just watched him every game. Like, he'd foul, like, two or three 96, 97-mile-an-hour fastballs straight back. Like, something's about ready to click with this guy. Like, if he gets enough at-bats, we got to make sure that he gets enough at-bats for it to click. And so now JT adds the durability piece. And so we worked together that whole offseason. He talked swing, I talked body. And that alone, it changed my mindset that, like, the weight room does matter on the field for those out, the old school guys out there say, oh, weightlifting's bad for baseball. It makes you tight. It makes you stiff. Like, whatever. Like, when I started thinking about it the way that he went about his business, and JT was a kinesiology major at Fullerton, and so he's talking about the body, and, like, it just really synced up, and it changed my mindset on the whole thing of, like, how this can support it. But nothing will ever replace throwing a baseball or hitting a baseball. Like, you have to be really good at that skill, and then everything else is just the platform that it lives off of.
Brandon, what did you name your second son?
Turner. He broke, like, Babe Ruth's record in 15 in the playoffs for batting average or doubles or something like that. And my wife and I were struggling to find a name. Turner was a little bit of a surprise because we found out when Caleb's first birthday party that Andrea was, you know, with Turner. And so we struggled to, like, figure out a name. And then he goes off in the playoffs. And I jokingly said, like, let's just name him Turner. And she loved the name. And I'm like, all right, well, we're sticking with it. So, but it's pretty cool to be able, like, for Turner to obviously, like, be around him and meet him and see him. And we live fairly close to each other. So I always gleam when I see those two get to be around each other.
Yeah. Who is the strongest guy on the team?
Who's the strongest guy, or who's going to be the most mad that I don't say it?
You don't name him the strongest? Is it two different answers?
Yeah, like, pound for pound, Barnes. Barnes is a freak. Yeah, like, really? He's a little ball of fast twitch. Walker moves weight faster than anybody I know.
Is that explosiveness? Is that how that's defined?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to, like, you've been in a weight room. We've done some workouts together. Like, when somebody's got four wheels on, like, four plates on, and they rattle.
Yeah.
Because you move, like, that's Walker. Like, he does a rattle, goes, and it sounds like an earthquake. That's when you know somebody's moving something fast. And so he's really good. Barnes is the same way. He's got leverage on his side, but he's just a little ball of fast switch. So I always kind of break these up into categories. Barnes is the strongest. Walker moves it the fastest. Clayton will just outlast you because he'll be in there forever. And then DJ Peters, he just eats the weights. He just
like a caveman.
He just, yeah, it's not pretty, but he moves them and he just looks, he should probably be a dual sport guy and play a little outside linebacker in the NFL too. Like, grow his hair out nice and long. but yeah, DJ, him living in Glendora and working out with us for the last 5 years in the off season, like, just another awesome, like, relationship to have, to watch him grow up.
Do guys just look at him over in the corner moving weight and go, I'm just not even going to compete with him?
No, there isn't. Like, there, you know, there's a level of, like, I can push myself a little bit and get with that guy today. And then you see DJ and you're like, I think I'm just going to go outside now.
I'm going to quit. Yeah, you know what the funny thing is too, right? So he's moving weights like that. He could be an NFL linebacker, but he could also be like a kindergarten teacher or a babysitter for your kids with his personality.
Yeah, he's, who is your daddy and what does he do? He's like, he's Arnold Schwarzenegger in Kindergarten Cop.
That's so funny.
He is an absolute, he would not hurt a fly.
Yeah.
He would not, I say that, like, I obviously, like, I'm not going to go test it either to find out, but I don't think he would hurt a fly.
He can hurt a baseball.
Oof. Oh, God, you should see this right now. This batting, RVS has been, Manskoyak has spent a lot of time with him.
Yeah.
Over the last couple months, and DJ's like miss hitting balls,
yeah,
up into the lights, and you're like, what?
Yeah, and the whole contact thing, part, yeah, of his tool. If his tool becomes contact, holy smokes, watch out!
That's dangerous. That's a dangerous combo right there.
I would love to get a chance to see that. I think we all would. We're going to finish up, Brandon, with some rapid fire. And the answer to these are just going to be a name of a player.
Mm-hmm.
Oral, you got them in front of you too?
Yep.
All right. Who's got the best workout playlist?
Kirsch.
What is
because it matches yours?
No. Like EMD, like he's got, is that what it's called?
EDM.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not
electronic
yours.
Dance music.
Definitely, yeah, there you go. EDM, is that what you said?
Yeah.
It's you would never expect it.
No, I'm surprised that's the.
It changed, like he'll lift today because he threw last night. He'll come in and it will be bumping.
Oh, girl.
Yeah.
All right. Who's the worst, Brandon?
They're not here anymore. But we've had some guys, we had two pitchers in the past that listened to like some really, really dark, like rock music.
You don't like that?
Heavy metal. I just felt like I was being screamed at, to be honest, for about an hour.
Talking like Slipknot.
Darker.
Darker. I didn't know
stuff
that was...
like you'd never even heard of. Yeah, like stuff I can't even. It was.
I'm gonna guess. Was it J.P. Howell?
No.
He'd be country.
No, J.P. had some. J.P. had good music taste. So
you're not gonna reveal this.
J.P. also
this
would
person.
Work out like once the game would start.
Huh.
That guy. Wow. We could have a podcast just talking about J.P.
Kenley Jansen on the podcast earlier during the quarantine named Howell as the best bullpen conversation that he's ever had.
Not to ruin rapid fire, but more because I'm scared of what the next question is going to be. The
delay in the inevitable.
Innings 1 through 5 in 13, 14, 15, Kenley, JP, and I would watch together down in the weight room.
Mm-hmm.
I hope like Kenley gave him a ton of props too for like his mindset. Like JP's a bulldog. And I really think he had a huge influence on Kenley because JP at that point wasn't JP Howe anymore. Like it wasn't the same stuff coming out, but he still knew how to get guys out. And Kenley was obviously on his trajectory up. And yeah. I think mindset really played a lot in Kenley's success.
Player that is most open to trying some new things in the gym, some off the wall stuff.
Doc.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not necessarily for me, but Jock's always got ideas. He's always got people. He's always got like stuff going on in the world. So Jock's my continuing ed. Like, I don't need courses in the house. Called Jock. What are you doing?
This one we've already done, so I'm going to switch it up and I'm going to say, who has made the most growth in the weight room as a player as you've watched it over your career?
Yeah, biggest transformation.
Yeah.
Man.
Somebody who came in like me, the 98-pound weakling, and all of a sudden, you know, mid-career, they're really into it.
Gavin is the easiest one to say, I think, because it's fresh. But, like, what would we draft Gavin at? $175, and he's 205 now.
Wow.
And he's put together. He's gotten faster. Like, I always talk about college strength programs. They have the ability to really get guys in their prime ages to develop power, like 18 to 21. And it was one of the things I thought was really underutilized in professional baseball because we were doing the same workouts with 18-year-olds as we were with, you know, 39-year-old Rich Hill last year. And so we really tried to capitalize on that the last few years with our draft picks. And Gavin's one of those guys that like got bigger, faster, and stronger by taking advantage of that time in his life.
And then the last one, I feel like you're the definitive answer of this question. We ask this to everybody. We've got a few common answers, but you are qualified to give us the answer. Who wins a cage match?
Joe Kelly.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. What are the other answers? And that's just like, I'm not messing with Joe.
Uh-huh. Neither is Tyler Austin. Remember that a couple of years ago, Boston,
that's,
New York?
That's part of it.
Uh-huh. Barnes and Baez have been near the top of the list.
Yeah. That would be top three for sure. So like Barnes, obviously, like let's just call him 1B.
Mm-hmm.
Baez, if he got his hands on you, no doubt. Joe is the unbelievable combination of length, size, and power. Like for him, like he has long arms. He's not necessarily put together, but he, I mean, he's put together. And then you don't just, 100 just doesn't come out of that arm stroke if there isn't lightning in a bottle. And I think you got to be, you know, you can't be scared. Right, I know Joe's not scared. Yeah. So I picked Joe.
About 3 to 5 years ago, wasn't there a guy like UFC that was like the spider, that if he got on you, it was over? He wasn't a good boxer, but he's just an unbelievable wrestler. Is that Joe? Was Joe, once he gets on you, you're done? Or is he going to hit you from a distance?
I have a feeling that Joe's going to do whatever he needs to do to win. Like that's where I'm, that's where I'm at with him, is like, if life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Like that's Joe's motto to cage match fighting, I would assume.
Love it. Brandon, this is great, man. It's good to catch up and hopefully be seeing each other more moving forward.
I love it for the fans. You pull the curtain back and show them a little bit what's going on.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Look forward to waving you guys up in the booth.
Can't wait, man. Joined by the skipper again, Dave Roberts, who again is joining us from his office at Dodger Stadium. Good to see you. Good to talk to you again. What was the best thing you saw this week, Doc?
The best thing I saw this week, outside of a Walker Buehler bullpen, which he was sitting 94-95 in a pen, was the Dodgers versus the Dodgers at Dodger Stadium. That was fun. You know, we've got to get a couple inter-squad games under our belt, and to see our guys, you know, take it seriously and compete, man, it was, it's been a long time coming.
Can't wait to hear more about that. But, Oral, I want to get your best thing this week.
Well, it's not as exciting as Dave's, but I saw a documentary called Outcry about a high school football player that was accused of something, and it takes you through 5 episodes of the pursuit for who did it, and did he do it or did he not do it, and I'm not going to ruin it.
But what is Outcry, it on?
I think it's on Showtime.
Showtime.
Okay.
Showtime.
Best thing I saw this week is actually the best thing I drank this week. Neighbor found out apparently that I was an old-fashioned guy. Ooh. And I was walking down the street the other day, and he shouted, he said, "Hey, I hear you love old fashions. My wife and I have one every night, and we have perfected the old fashioned." And so he brought over this concoction. It's the bitters and the sugar all boiled together with a cherry in it. And he said, "Just give this a try." And I gave it a try, and it was the best old fashioned I've ever had.
Wow.
Okay, I'm an old fashioned guy. I might need that recipe. And to that note, I've got something for both you guys. So, Trish and I have been to this place in Knoxville. It's on the foothills of the Smoky Mountains. It's called Blackberry Farm. Oral, you and Dana, you guys certainly got to hit that place up. It's kind of the farm to table, boutique-y situation. And so there's a drink called the Huntsman. And so I got this from the Blackberry magazine, and it is with the rye whiskey, it's the vanilla syrup, it's lemon juice, it's egg white, and the floater is like a red wine, whether it be a Malbec, Merlot, Cabernet.
Really?
So it's really interesting, and you don't even really need to love rye whiskey to love the drink, but it's a picturesque drink, and then the egg whites actually adds a little different dimension, as that little foamy, a different texture to it. It's pretty fun.
I would have never guessed the floater if you'd have said, "Okay, I'll give you 5 tries. What's the floater?"
Yeah, exactly. So you can kind of use it at your disposal, but have some type of red wine. There you go.
I'll send this to you, Doc. I actually have the bitter syrup recipe the guy gave me, and I would read it to everybody, but I should probably check with my friend Dennis, my neighbor Dennis, before I give the world his secret.
That's fair.
Old-fashioned, I love recipe. This conversation, because people wonder probably in the stands what we talk about around the cage. They probably think we're breaking down baseball.
Oh, no, we're breaking down cocktails. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, of course. But speaking of baseball, those scrimmages, I know we've gotten to eavesdrop a little bit. They've shown some of them on social media, going to do more of that, showing some on Sportsnet LA. Who and what has stood out to you over this first week?
It's been a lot of fun. You know, Jock Homer the other day, stripped off of Ross, but Ross threw really well, got through 4 and was up in the 5th inning. His mix was really good. Changeup was really good. He's worked on a new grip this winter. Clayton looked good, throwing the ball well. slider wasn't as sharp as he'd like it, but the velocity was really good. But the guys, I mean, really taking good at bats, making great defensive plays. JT made a play to his backhand. Arm strength is there. He looks great. Mookie already has an assist. And I just think that I get to see Trinan tonight, so I'm looking forward to seeing that. And, Fergie was good the other day. Josiah Gray is a guy, a prospect that we got over from the Reds. And he's just such a good-looking prospect with a big arm, so we got to see him too. So it's going to be fun.
Skipper, you know, in a six-week spring training, there's time for competition. There's time for guys to really make a splash, and you keep running them out there if it's a young guy and seeing, okay, when's he going to fail? Because then we'll probably be sending him down, and some guys don't fail, and they end up making a club. Is there any time for competition in these 3 weeks?
Well, I think that if you know, we know that we're going to break camp. On the position player side, I really don't see much of it. But obviously, you understand that with what the uncertainties with injury and this pandemic, that people are all in play for the most part. And then on the pitching side, I think there's some spots available. And obviously, I think that we still have, 2.5 weeks left till we break camp, and anything can happen. But I love our depth, and regardless of where these guys start, whether active, a starter in the pen, whatever roles, I know we're going to count on a lot of these guys throughout. So I still think, though, which I tell our guys oral, is every day is a test.
So it's 30-man rosters to begin. Say that somebody is like man number 31 or man number 32, just fringe, don't quite make it. Do they then go to the alternate site, or can they still be around Dodger Stadium?
They'll go to the alternate site. But there's also a taxi too, so they could be on the 3-man taxi potentially. Okay. That travels with us, because if something happens, when we're on the road, then you got to have that extra bodies or options. So there's 3 guys. 1 will be a catcher, and then 2 will be, I'm guessing a position player and a pitcher.
But your roster move is not, you don't have to go to the taxi guy. If you've got enough time to get somebody from the other complex, you can skip the 3 guys in the taxi squad and go to somebody else.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah.
Dave, what was your conversation like with David Price?
It was just more of, in talking to him throughout quarantine, he's very intelligent and was really in tune with what's going on, with this pandemic. And, it weighed heavily on his heart, his mind. And I think for me, my message was, we support him. It was a tough decision. It had to be his decision. And just rest your mind and your heart, because I think that there's a lot of anxiety that you feel you let people down. But no one in this clubhouse or Dodger Nation feels that way.
And then there are currently 7 players, as of the time recording this Wednesday afternoon, yet to report. There have been rumors floating on the internet that Kenley Jansen is considering the same thing, given his heart issue, that he's considering opting out. I know you can only tell us so much, but any light you can shed on that rumor?
Yeah, I think that it's one of those, it goes in the bucket of, you can't believe everything you read. And I've been in contact with Kenley over the last few days, and I expect him back with us very soon. So, yeah.
There's some other impact guys on that 7 that haven't, right? You've got Baez and A.J. Pollock. I don't know the whole list off the top of my head. Tony Gonsolin, maybe?
Sure, sure. And the thing is that these are guys that we need. We're counting on this year, and I expect them to be in camp. And I think that, in light of what's going on, there's been information that's been divulged from various clubs, and that's kind of the players' right. But I think as far as our players, we just want to keep that in-house until they feel they want to divulge why they're, showing up a little bit later to camp.
Any kind of rhythm developing there at camp for you, for the players?
Yeah, there is. There is. I think that for us it's really important for us to be at Dodger Stadium, I think. Understanding how we get into the ballpark, there's a new parking lot, how we get to the clubhouse, and how we prepare for the day, as opposed to coming from Arizona and then starting a season and kind of understanding, the protocols each day. So that's been good. Our guys have really have been good at accepting it, trying to understand it, adhere to kind of the regulations. Rhythm, we still got to get all of our guys here, but I do think that guys throwing pens and the banter back and forth, the batting practice, the grounders, guys preparing to play, I think that's something that we really haven't missed a beat with since spring training.
Is this pretty much the routine and the rhythm over the rest of summer camp, or are there changes to the schedule coming up over the final couple weeks of this?
It's going to be similar. Yesterday was a light day where guys came in and, you know, got their lifts in, hitting the cage, threw a little bit. The pitchers did some flat grounds. We didn't have any bullpens. And today we're going to get to about four innings today. And then we're going to do a little situation on the field where it's the machine. And we're going to have the machine kind of cranked up with velo, and then we're going to spin it as well and simulate an extra innings. So we're going to take the players off the field, but it's a hitting exercise as far as getting around second base with nobody out and the, you know, call it the 10th inning, and how you're going to execute getting this guy over. And then if he does, then, you know, play the infield in or back, whatever the game situation calls for. So we're going to do that. But as the days go on and the pitchers build up, the days are going to get even longer because we're going to go from 4, 5, 6, 7 to ultimately 9 innings.
There's a huge culture shift in that 10th inning. Have you noticed any culture shifts as far as the way the guys are celebrating, the way they're ragging on each other? Have you noticed anything changing where you can see them kind of body language start to do what they used to do, and then they kind of have to hold up?
Yeah, you know, Mookie scored a run and kind of did the air high five. Jock did the same thing. And it was funny, though, is that you do hear a lot more than you normally would, where there was an at bat the other day. Jock comes up to bat and Cody and Jock are really tight, and there's have a lot of banter between the two of those guys. And Cody's in center field and yells, "Easy out." And then Jock kind of steps out, laughs at him. First pitch changeup, homers. And then he points at Cody in center field, and he's going around the bases pointing and laughing and mocking him. So these are little things that, man, it's going to be interesting to see without the fans. And I know there's going to be some noise piped in, yeah, but, man, we're going to hear a lot of things.
Are we going to be like Little League? Hey, bada, bada, bada. Hey, bada, bada, bada.
So wing, bada. Yeah. That's the – I just watched that show. I just watched that movie, Ferris Bueller, last night. You know, they're at Wrigley Field, and yep, Cameron saying – bada, 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 swing, bada, Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy.
So funny. Good. It's going to be like Little League, or like the college World Series softball.
Pitcher's got an arm
World
like
Series.
A washing machine.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
the old one right there.
word is that Bob Guerin has been the home plate umpire for some of these games. How's his zone?
You know what? Bob's zone, I think, considering, it's been fantastic. I think that there are some pitchers that might complain. But guys are always going to complain. Man, to have him back there, and he's got his Dodger, black Dodger suit on. So, I mean, Bob is dialed in. So it's funny, though, guys, is that, you know, everyone around this organization is doing more, and that's what's fun to see. So Bob taking the reins behind the home plate. You wouldn't see me back there, let me tell you.
I watched the inter-squad game and stripling through a low and away slider to Justin Turner. And yep, it was called a strike, and I could see Stripling smiling ear to ear at Justin, and then kind of to his infielders like, "Oh, I got that one."
Oh, yeah, exactly. And then later on, I think there was another at bat where Bob missed one, and then there was a clear strike right down the middle, and then he balled it. So he's just kind of chasing his tail. But it's just still good to have somebody behind there as opposed to, you know, a coach behind the mound. And I think for me is we're all in uniform. And I think that it just sets a better tone where we don't look like a ragtag group and we look like professionals and competing, because we only have such a small window to get ready.
Would you ever formulate a couple teams and say, okay, guys, we're going to play 3 inter-squad games back to back to back, put up some prize money or something, and, you know, just to bring the intensity in?
That's good. So we've got 3 exhibition games at the end, 2 versus the Diamondbacks, 1 versus the Angels. I am sort of thinking of a mini 3-game World Series butting up to that exhibition, those exhibition games. And like the pitches will be built up, and we'll have a little bit more clarity. Yeah, so like a 6-inning, you know, win 2 out of 3, and then we'll have some bragging rights, and we might put a pot of gold in the middle of it to fight for.
Love it. Our top 4 this week, we're going to do this is a Rick Krajewski idea, our producer. The 4 things that you would take with you into, so think NBA or NHL style quarantine bubble, they're playing their season. If you were going into a bubble, quarantined, what 4 things are you taking with you?
Okay, so I'm going to start, I hope this is permissible. I'm asking there's no for a little rules. Bit of latitude. So as long as there's electricity, I'm going to bring my wine station that I have in my house.
Love
so,
it.
You know, you're in quarantine, you're indoors, you're isolated. I'm going to need something to partake in from the alcoholic family, so from the wine family. So I have this wine station that has four different wines. So having that wine station after workouts would be fantastic. I'm going to bring my golf clubs and hope that some high-priced payer has this golf simulator so I can just play Pebble, I can play St. Andrews, I can do whatever I want with the golf clubs. I'm going to have my tennis racket. I've taken up tennis as well, so I don't know how I can kind of simulate the virtual with the tennis racket, but man, this is the big leagues. We're going to have a huge bubble, so I'm going to practice my tennis. And the last thing, I'm going to have my Peloton bike so I can kind of play for the tie after I'm drinking wine. I can play for the tie and burn some calories.
Wow. I love it.
Mine are kind of like Dave. My first one was a little bit more thinking I might be sick, and I just wanted to make sure I had my favorite corkscrew.
There you go. Hey, we can hang together.
I could open the wine.
Perfect.
The other one is I felt like I might not be feeling good, so I need a lot of pillows if I'm going to be in bed all day. I can't go with just two pillows. I got to have one under my leg to help my back. I got to have a couple behind my back. So I'm bringing all my extra favorite pillows in there. I got to have Apple TV. I got to have Apple TV just so I can
watch your concerts, you know, your Sarah Bareilles concerts.
If I'm over in the guest room, which doesn't have Apple TV, we've got it in the master and we've got it in the main room, but I don't have Apple TV in the guest room, and that's probably where I'd be quarantined. So I was thinking that for sure. And I don't know. After that, it was... I know what you want me to put, which is the Peloton like Dave.
use mine. Or
I was going to definitely find a way to ventilate the green egg and open a window and have the green egg in there in case I could digest some of that food.
There you go.
So anytime I travel, I'm always worried about what is there going to be to eat? What are my food options going to be? Am I going to get enough? So I'm bringing lifetime supply of protein powder just in case. Okay. You know, you never know when you get the days where you don't have food readily available to get your protein in.
Skip, he is a bar guy. He has a lot of bars during the game to keep
he's a bar guy. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Always got the bar.
Sure.
Briefcase, because I can put my computer and my phone and some books in the briefcase. So I'm cheating a little bit with that, putting several items into one. My foam roller. Okay. Got to be able to roll out the joints. I'm thinking in the quarantine, you may be maybe extra confined and get stiff, and yeah, you got to bring the foam roller. Yeah, for sure. And I thought way too realistically about this. The egg is so damn heavy. I said, why don't I just bring a small Weber kettle? A little easier. We want to know what kind of space I'm going to have in my quarantine room. Mm-hmm. So hopefully my patio, you know, it doesn't need to be that big to get a little mini Weber kettle.
That would look good because you could like close the toilet and put the Weber on top of the toilet and use the fan to get the smoke out.
You could, yeah. I'm going to let you try that. You let me know how it goes, and if the building's still
green
standing,
egg wouldn't
I'll try.
Fit in there.
No, it would not.
I'll tell you what's great about you two is you're like me in the sense that, you know, there's that phrase, do you eat to live or do you live to eat? And us three, we all live to eat.
Oh, for sure.
And I don't apologize for that at all.
Nope. It's one of the best things, huh?
We got the show tonight because we're going to cover your three innings inter-squad game, Skip, and I'm doing it with the whole guys from the studio, but I'm doing it from Vegas. And I'm telling Dana, like, okay, I'll be off the show at 7:30. We're doing 6:30, 7:30. I'll light the green egg. We're going to have pizza around 8:30. I'll get it up to 700 degrees, and here we go. So I'm planning out the whole day. Joe has got me so green egg now. It's like it's the whole day. I look forward to that end of the day and the green egg.
So after Trine and Throws, Floro, Santana, Caleric, I'll be thinking about you and jealous that you're going to crush some homemade pizza with probably some Italian wine. So enjoy.
Eventually here, the world will be back to normal. We can all enjoy it together.
That'd be great.
Sound good?
Love it.
All right, Doc. Thanks, man.
All right, boys.
Thank you, buddy. Our submission to the mailbag this week comes from Mark Shepard. Oral, Mark wants to know, what baseball game would you want to go back in time to broadcast? So I love this question, by the way.
It is a great question, yeah. And I had a few. I was going to say Don Larson's perfect game in the World Series, and I said, that's going too far back. So I thought about my other one that I was on the edge of my seat as an active player. But watching it, it was game seven of the 1991 World Series. Jack Morris against John Smoltz.
Yeah.
Game six, Kirby Puckett is the hero. He makes a game-saving catch. He hits an RBI triple. He hits an 11th inning home run to get him to game seven in a walk-off. And then Jack Morris throws a shutout, a 1-0 shutout against the Atlanta Braves, and goes 10 innings on his second start on 3 days rest, throws 122 pitches. And I was hanging on every pitch. It was ridiculous. I'm like 33 years old or whatever I am in 91. Yeah, and I'm an active big leaguer. And I'm like, this is one of the best games I've ever seen.
I mean, there's nothing better than a pitcher's duel. And then when you put that in game seven of the World Series.
Yeah, it was the longest game, as far as an extra inning game in baseball, since 1924. From 1924 to 1991, a game seven didn't go extra innings, and this one did, and Morris pitched all 10.
You couldn't do the Don Larsen perfect game. It was against the Dodgers. That wouldn't have been fun.
I know.
So I'm glad you went with the one that you did. In thinking of the same thing, thinking of the the low-scoring games especially, I thought about Sandy Koufax's perfect game where Bob Henley was close to perfect himself, gave up just the one hit. But that was kind of a random dog days of summer game to begin with, so it didn't have the environment or the buildup that, like yours, Game 7 of the World Series would. So I'm going to say Game 7 of the 1955 World Series where the Dodgers win their first championship. Johnny Padres, a shutout, 2-0 win. Gil Hodges drives in both runs. The Dodgers had lost to the Yankees seven times over the last decade and a half in the World Series, and they finally broke through. And so just all that context surrounding that, it would have been better if it was in Brooklyn, if it was at Ebbets Field as opposed to Yankee Stadium. But I'm going to say that for an old one. And then a game that I actually watched and wished that I could have called, Game 6 of the 2011 World Series, St. Louis and Texas, I think is the best game I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Is that David Freese?
Yeah.
Yep. And that's Cruz making a few steps in to possibly celebrate, and the ball goes over his head?
Yep.
Wow, what a nightmare.
Yeah, and then Lance Berkman had a game-tying hit in there. But even from the start, that game was incredible. You could just feel it building as the game went on, these magical moments happening, even second, third inning at St. Louis, a great environment. And this is love the question, Mark. Thank you for sending it. Off air with Joe and Oral at gmail.com. Just the whole thing spelled out. What are you most looking forward to this week, partner?
Because people know I'm leaving Vegas and coming to LA soon, I haven't gotten my full schedule yet, so I don't have a date, but everybody knows it's coming. So there's a lot of dinners scheduled because we're still open here in Vegas. So a lot of dinners scheduled with friends this next week coming up. So those are always fun. We already had one last night. We went and had a Taco Tuesday at our local Mexican restaurant, and it was a lot of fun. And there's about three or four more of those scheduled coming up. So we're going to be party animals with friends, kissing them goodbye for hopefully 3 months in a world championship.
Don't kiss them, though. Elbow to elbow. That's the new
fist
kiss.
Fist bump, elbow to elbow.
Yeah.
Air kiss.
Yeah. For me, we've seen more and more baseball stuff. We've gotten back to practices and summer camp, and getting to watch the inter-squad games is cool. But you know me, I'm kind of a work junkie. And so just looking forward to continuing to get back to work and prep for what we still cross our fingers for will be an actual season.
That's what makes you so good, is that you love the prep. You're dedicated to it. Yeah, but you're dedicated to it in a different way than I've seen with other people, because you're dedicated out of passion and love for the game, and not just because you want to be the best broadcaster ever. You have so many different motivations.
I do love it. And you know what's cool about it is, first of all, in this industry, and no different for your position as an analyst, you have to love to prep. You have to want to prep. But in terms of the loving baseball, the more I read about it, the more I prep, the more I love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, there's so many layers. There are countless layers to pull back of the game, whether that's the X's and O's of what happens within a game or it's the historical layers to the game.
Okay, same thing happened to me with the green egg that you turned me on to, because I really wanted to figure out how to make my meat here in Vegas a little bit more moist and tender because it dries out and I had to use higher temperatures and it takes so long. So I put beer and water in my drip pan for my ribs right from the very beginning. And I put in a container of water, like if you were doing a chicken and you were going to do a beer can chicken, I took the green egg apparatus that they put into the chicken and I put beer and water into that and had that off to the side on the grill. So I had two other things putting a lot of humidity and my ribs turned out amazing. Ooh. So studying cooking is like studying now.
Yeah.
Like you study for baseball.
The more you study it, the more you love it. Your rib method, are you doing my turbo method or are you going low and slow?
I did your turbo method and they were so moist and juicy. I loved the flavor the first time, but I'm like, these are just drier than Joe's. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to experiment and I'm going to put moisture into my drip pan and some other moisture on the grill, on the grate. And it worked perfect.
And those turbo ribs take a third of the time as the low and slow ones. So it's like, eh, you could argue that the low and slow has something special about it, but I would argue that the other ones taste better and they're faster and easier.
Are you able to stabilize your green egg at 225 or 350 and just walk away for a half hour? Or do you have to stay there and just keep watching it?
You know my personality, so I have a hard time just walking away, and I know you're the same. I think that the small – so we both have extra larges, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the smaller eggs are easier to stabilize, but the bigger ones, they can be kind of fickle.
And I got here in the winter in Vegas, we have a lot of wind variations at sundown, which is usually when I'm cooking. So when the temperature starts to reach its peak and then starts to go down when the sun sets, that's when we get our wind. And I'm up in close to the Red Rock Mountains. So the wind vacillates and I have to figure out which direction to have the vent open, because if the wind hits it, it makes the fire go, you know, hotter. And if the wind dies down and I've got the opening at you know, half inch or a quarter inch, all of a sudden I start to lose my temp. So it's a challenge here in Vegas.
Vacillation, though. Vacillate. Yeah. Good. Can't wait to be back on TV with you. That'll be so cool talking about baseball and that's actually happening in front of us.
There's going to be so much room in the press box. We might be able to bring a green egg up there.
Ooh.
There's not going to be.
Do you have to have 6 feet between you and the green egg, though? When you get in the booth, we may run out of space.
I haven't found a mask big enough for my egg.
Yeah, no, it'd be a large one. It'd be a tarp. All right. Love you, man.
Love you too, pal.